Hello, everyone, and welcome into another edition of the Talking Puck Podcast. Tom Callahan and Jay Levin here with you. I am at Callahan on air on Twitter. He is at Bowtie Sports on Twitter. And we love interacting with you over there as well as through the blog here at talkingpuck.wordpress.com. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk a little bit about expansion. Jay, there is a 31st NHL team. It will be based in Las Vegas. We don't know much else. We don't know what it's going to be called. We don't know who the first GM is going to be yet. We're just kind of waiting to see how it all shakes out, but probably the worst kept secret in the world let out of the bag officially.
Yeah, when we were talking yesterday morning doing the podcast for yesterday, we kind of presumed that that this would be the topic for today. It's great news for Las Vegas. I think it's going to be really beneficial for the league. I think that that's going to be a strong market for them, both in terms of the local market and in terms of the tourists who love to flock to Vegas. So I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a good addition to the NHL scene.
And of course, Quebec City deferred on the expansion, so not completely shot down, but just kind of backburnered for now. And I mean, obvious enough, Jay, they want another team in the West, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But in the meantime, Bill Foley's group goes through the process. They seem to have said and done all the right things. They've got a beautiful arena that this team's going to play in. Now really becomes almost the more difficult part than even getting the franchise is figuring out how you're going to pull this all together within the next 16 months or so.
But I think they've got a pretty good blueprint to follow. You looked the last rounds of expansion, the teams knew far enough in advance, they were able to start putting some staff together. For those fans here in Nashville, David Poile was hired a full year out, was able to start getting some of the pieces in place well in advance of the expansion draft. I think that that's what we're probably going to see in Vegas. My expectation would be before the start of next season, they've got at least a skeleton hockey operations crew, if not a GM named, at least two or three highly regarded scouts in place. But it would not surprise me if before August they wind up selecting a GM. It would not surprise me if they wind up naming a team president and start putting in a 5, 6, 7 person staff on the front office side to start building out some plans there. So I think there are blueprints by what the last round of expansion did, and I'm comfortable that the league will give them the type of support that they need to make sure that they are successful.
Now, a question that has been asked a couple of times, and so I want to put it out there right now, as far as the expansion draft goes, folks are wondering, okay, my franchise, whichever one it is that you follow, what is it going to look like for us as an NHL member club already? So here in a nutshell is what it boils down to. Each team has the option of protecting either 7 forwards, 3D, and a goalie, or 8 total skaters and a goalie. Teams have to expose at least 2 forwards and a defenseman who have played either 40 games in the previous season, which will be this upcoming 16-17 season, or 70 games in the previous two seasons, last year and this upcoming season. Teams can only lose a max of 1 player regardless of position, and teams must protect players with no movement clauses. So like Keith Yandel just getting a no movement clause as part of his deal for the majority of it with Florida, he's not going to be a guy in the expansion draft. And so for some teams, I wonder if those no movement clauses may actually handicap them a little bit as far as who they'd like to put out there.
Well, Tom, I mean, we've talked about it a bit in some of the podcasts over the last week or two. Pittsburgh is a team who potentially could really be hammered by this. Marc-Andre Fleury has a no-movement clause. Murray just won a Stanley Cup as a starting goaltender. You cannot protect 2 goaltenders. They must, by virtue of that no-movement clause, protect Marc-Andre Fleury. Murray, under 25-year-old goaltender with a Stanley Cup ring, would then be exposed unless Pittsburgh winds up trading him before that. or finds a suitor for Marc-Andre Fleury before then.
A lot of teams, I think, are going to face some difficulties here. So I'm really interested to see how it's all going to shake out, because we talk about other teams. So now you look at, and I always like to go back to the Dallas goaltending example. They have two guys in Lettinen and Niemi that are both out there. You know, you figure, okay, they'll be okay with exposing one guy. But what happens, let's say, if, you know, Tampa Bay ends up keeping Ben Bishop, and then you've got the same conundrum there, Bishop and Vasilevsky coming up, and there's a lot of good veteran goalie with a young goalie with a high ceiling, I think, sitting in this league right now. So it makes this season's transactions almost as, if not more important, because now you have to think, and I go back to the Yandle deal, looking at how long they've locked him up for as a 29-year-old, 7 years on that deal, six of which are no movement. I mean, he's going to be 37 years old towards the end of that deal. They're going to be paying him out this money, and Jay, they can't move him. If he happens to hit a wall at 32, they're stuck with him. And it just, it still boggles my mind that we see these contracts being handed out. Maybe this is a tangent, but it might be one worth exploring.
Well, I mean, clearly Florida knew all of the rules and regulations when it came to expansion as they were finalizing this deal. So I'll give them a pass that way, wise, that this was a decision that they went in eyes wide open. You know, they knew exactly what all the rules were. I agree with you. For a guy who's going to turn 30 before training camp opens this season, a seven-year deal at that type of money seems both long and expensive. But the Panthers do have a lot of cap flexibility, and it may be a situation, as some people are speculating, that they need to spend a certain amount to get to the basement of the cap level. So I find this a very strange contract, but that there might be other issues in play, so I'll give them a little bit of a pass for right now.
I think maybe I'm just kind of looking at the bigger picture in all of this. I shake my head at a lot of the contracts we see given to guys. It doesn't matter what the year is or if there's an expansion draft coming or not. Let's go back to talking about the expansion. So Las Vegas will be able to kind of pick its team, put it together, you know, just about, what, 363 or 362 days from now. And they will be moving forward into the draft. They will be able to pick in this year's draft. How would you feel about if they'd have let them pick this year? And I know they don't have a hockey ops staff in place to go in this weekend into Buffalo and to hurry up and make a few draft picks, but it doesn't seem like such a bad idea to announce a team far enough out where they could participate in two drafts.
That I think that would greatly help a team in terms of being competitive. Again, maybe not year one, but being much more competitive years two, three, four, being able to ramp up a lot more. Obviously, with the timing of this particular announcement, making the announcement the week of the draft, that's really not enough time to even try to do it. But if they had deferred their enrollment for a year and had them entering in 18-19 instead, for them to draft next year as year minus one, as well as the year directly leading into, I think that gives you a lot deeper talent pool of young prospects that you can develop before you even start to drop the puck. So yeah, I think that would be a really good way of doing things without taking players off of current NHL rosters.
Yeah, I really agree with you there, to give them that extra head start to kind of get that build going. I would be completely in favor of that. One other thing too, now that, and again, Las Vegas, probably the worst kept secret. We know the Quebec City's been deferred. There's that Seattle thing that keeps hanging out there. And I was reading an article in the Seattle Times today talking about Chris Hansen, his want for an arena, and wants NBA first. He's an NBA guy, loves basketball, but the NBA has said over and over, Commissioner Silver has stated on record, zero interest in expanding, certainly within the time frame of the memorandum of understanding that exists with the Seattle City Council. It expires November of 2017. So the article today, the opinion was, well, the NHL has pretty much done everything to Chris Hansen except buy him dinner and give him flowers. And I feel like that's pretty true. I mean, we've seen Bill Daly go to Seattle. We've seen Gary Bettman go to Seattle. But it's a non-starter if you're talking about NHL first until that memorandum expires. As far as public funding goes, there's a $200 million gap there. So the question becomes, would Chris Hansen entertain getting a building lined up, finding a way to come up with the extra $200 million in that funding gap as to what would be covered publicly, do it himself, and kind of get a handshake agreement with the NHL saying, okay, if I get a shovel-ready arena, can I get a team? And then after that, hang out and wait until the NBA is ready to expand, and then Seattle becomes a prime market with a building already built for the NBA. It seems like if you want something now, Seattle, the NHL is the league that is going to come to you right now. Other than that, I don't know when the NBA is going to want to come knocking.
Yeah, I think that you're right. The NHL definitely has shown strong interest in the Pacific Northwest. Seattle is the market that the NHL has shown the most overt interest in. But I think if Portland were to express interest, I don't think that they would have any qualms about moving into Portland. I think that those are the two markets that, if you gave Gary Bettman some truth serum, really put him in front of a microphone, I think those are the two markets he would really like to see put in expansion bids and let those two markets kind of fight it out to come up with the best proposal. The Seattle question, boy, you know, if Hansen wants to be an NBA guy, I don't know if bringing an NHL team there gets him any closer. I think there are some concerns about Seattle in its market size, in its corporate size, of being able to maintain three pro sports teams, definitely being able to maintain four pro sports teams. So if you've got NHL, if you've got NFL, if you've got MLB in there, I think that raises the concern level for the NBA of getting back into that market.
Well, and I will say this for Seattle, as far as market size, it is, it's growing. And then there was Census Bureau data that was released in the middle of May. I happen to be checking this out. But Seattle is now basically the 18th biggest market. And so not the city of Seattle, but the market of Seattle, the metro area, 18th. So could it handle four pro sports teams? Maybe. And of course, what it really depends on, Jay, almost beyond ticket dollars, is corporate dollars as to whether or not the support would be there for all four teams. Would the NHL, if they go in now and it's a good situation, if you get an NBA team, does it eventually become a bad situation? These are certainly things you have to think about. So we're not there yet, but just food for thought right now, looking ahead to Seattle. But Las Vegas will be in 2017. 2018, they'll become the 31st NHL franchise. So looking forward to it, Jay. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we have the draft coming up, and you are actually going to take a look inside for Nashville Predators fans here, a look at the possibilities and what's out there for the Preds.
Yeah, you know, you and I have been talking a lot about what do the Preds look for in the draft. You know, we've been talking to our various friends around the league who are involved with scouting or who know scouts for different teams. So, you know, we've had a number of conversations. So this is just kind of whittling down some of those conversations we've had, looking at some players who potentially fit the profiles in different draft slots. I think both of us are in agreement here that perfect case scenario, the Preds would love to see the correct defenseman fall to them in the first round, and they definitely seem to have a strong interest in picking at least two defensemen with those first four selections, the first round pick, second round pick, and the two third round picks. However, as we know, David Poile, along with Paul Fenton, along with Jeff Kelty, those three have worked together for quite a few drafts. They tend to stick very much to best player available. So if the right defenseman is not there in the first round, I can see them picking a high impact forward, making sure that they grab defensemen though second, and with some of those third round picks. However, I've got a question for you, Tom. Based on what went on with Jimmy Vesey just a couple months ago, just culminating in the trading of his rights around a week ago, do you think that impacts Nashville's draft board and how they look at some of these college kids?
You know, Jay, I'd be really surprised if it did. In fact, I'd be shocked if it did. And, you know, Nashville, whether they feel like they were spurned or jilted or led astray, however you want to put it, you know, the experience wasn't a good one. Yeah, they've got a sour taste in their mouth from it. But, boy, if you're going to let that one experience sour you on college players in general, especially because in the last, say, 5 years or so, I think, you know, U.S. college has done a better job of churning out pro-ready guys. Now, you can have the debate about junior versus pro. We're not going to have it here. It would take too long to even get into. But I just want to say, you know, hey, if you're going to let that affect you and your view of prospects moving forward and you feel a little bit burned by that, I mean, shame on you. That's not the way to approach it, in my opinion. You really have to be able to get past that and take everything on a case-by-case basis. You know what? He's not the first guy and won't be the last guy that a team feels like they got a raw deal from. So that's just the way it goes.
All right. Well, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting weekend up in Buffalo. Very excited to see what the Preds end up doing. Again, we talked about this a little bit more in depth yesterday. We're going to put that blog post out, you know, in a little bit on some of the possibilities. So I'm excited to see. One thing that we do know, though, within the next 24 hours, things are going to change. There's bound to be a trade, or there are bound to be trades that are rumored to be near completion within the next 24 hours. Those will change the situations quite a bit. So looking forward to seeing what goes on next couple days.
And you can stay out in front of things and just follow Jay and I on Twitter. As a matter of fact, I mean, just some of the things we've mentioned in the past couple of days that are in the news today about PK Subban maybe going to Edmonton. It's something Jay's brought up before. Vancouver is listed in there. Buffalo is going to be very active. Calgary, there's talk about Buffalo doing a deal right now with Anaheim on the eve of the draft. So much going on. Follow Jay at Bowtie Sports. I am at Callahan on Air. And, of course, you can always keep up with us here on the Talking Puck blog and watch for Jay's blog to drop here on the Predators pre-draft prospects as well. Thanks for listening in, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.